Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
So you said you were singing our theme song?
I was.
Andrea, is that what you said? Is that how we're starting
the
show today?
I was.
All right, go on.
Past tense.
Come on
tense.
Momentum. No, not going to do it. You were talking all that smack a little minute
Advice.
Ago. There it is. There it is.
It
hey,
that part.
Welcome back. So, this is Hampton's homecoming weekend.
Oh, so you're just going to throw that back in my face.
No, I'm just saying, like... And by the way, I am decked out in Morgan State gear.
Yes, you are. Yeah. Good for you. That's lovely.
I'm one of those alumni that really cares about his institution.
Oh, so you're trying to say because I'm not on the yard that I don't care about my institution?
No,
let me tell you how much I care. You know, the text messages, the Facebook groups, all the different groups alumni are posting in and communicating around. My heart hurt a little bit. Like, I'm sad that I'm not there.
You're not going to homecoming?
I'm not going to homecoming this year. That is what I'm saying.
Okay.
I will be
something better to do
with my family.
I got you. Something better to do. Something came up.
I'll be at Brown.
So Hampton's not your family, is what I'm hearing.
Hampton is absolutely my family.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
But
there's other family
comes first. I have other commitments.
That's fair.
But I'm sad.
Yeah.
I'm sad.
Do you always go to homecoming?
No.
Like, how often do you not go? Like,
I've not gone more than I have gone.
Oh, then don't even get sad.
No.
You don't have
but
a right
I'm,
to be sad.
But I'm, I went last year, and I need more of that in my life.
I got you.
I'm very sad.
I have not missed a Morgan State homecoming since 1995.
Lovely.
And I'm keeping that streak going.
Good.
One year, though, I had to leave. I had a family reunion that weekend. I'm like,
what?
All weekends?
In the fall?
Exactly.
Do black people do reunions in the fall?
Who does that? This was in the South. This was in Columbia, South Carolina. I had to be there at like noon on Saturday.
That is special.
The game's at 1. So I went on Friday. And went to all the parties, the let out, everything.
Yep.
And then Saturday morning, I got up at the crack of dawn and caught a crop duster to Columbia.
So listen, I tried to work it out.
Yeah.
My goal was to have been there Thursday and Friday and left Saturday morning.
Mm.
But I couldn't make it work.
Why didn't you ask me to borrow the company jet? Like, all you had to do is ask, don't you?
We don't got that yet.
All right. That would require us to go out and buy a company
next year.
Yeah, we don't have that. But maybe it's coming, you know, because...
Greater is coming.
We are doing a little better than we were a few years ago, at least speaking personally in terms of the Momentum Advisors economy. Our clients are doing a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Our firm is doing a little better.
Yep.
And I believe our listeners are doing a little better. But this question keeps coming up. Am I doing better than I was 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And or 4 years ago?
Yeah. And that happens, right? During particularly presidential election cycles. Because I don't know how many.
But more so this year. Don't you think it's more so this year?
I do. Because the stakes feel like they're higher than they ever were. And I'm not really sure that even answering that question correctly is the main thing we should be worried about, but I digress. I think, not to get to the punchline too quickly, but I think there's a disconnect between what's really happening mm-hmm. and how people feel about what's really happening.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why, right? We've had 3 years of really, really bad inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of folks, that's left people feeling very stretched.
Mm-hmm.
They're not taking into account, perhaps, that they're making more money or that their house is worth more or that their 401k is worth more.
Mm-hmm.
But the singular data point or soundbite is that there's been a lot of inflation. We've explained why.
And there has been, but it's not where it was.
Yeah. And so today, let's talk about that. Let's break down, because like, here's the thing, and this is not a political show, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
This show today is really about economic data. We are going to break down a little bit about the overall economy, but what we're really going to focus on today is personal economy. What does the average balance sheet income statement look like for the average American? We'll talk a little bit about Black and Hispanic Americans as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll talk about what we can do to make it better, because while this is not a political show, I want you all to realize that we do have an impact on whether we're better or not. Like, yes, the president has an impact too, but we also can contribute to whether we're better off or not. And if you're not better off today than you were 4 or 5 years ago, it ain't all on Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Right.
Some of that is on you.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about that some as well.
Let's do it.
So let's talk about the economy in general. And I feel like we beat this horse to death on a regular basis.
The inflation horse?
No, just like the economy in general. Like, we talk a lot about the economy, and when we talk about GDP growth, what we're really trying to say is the overall, if you added up all the businesses, all the people, all the government spending, like how much are we spending? Is it more or less than the year before? And if things are rolling, then we generally say that things are good.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're good, though.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you're bad. If the economy's in a recession, it doesn't mean you're good or bad, but we're giving you the information so that you can't just fall for the lie that we're doing horribly.
Or the line that we're doing stellarly. Stellarly is not a word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't really hear anyone saying that, though. Anyone saying that we're doing stellar or stellarly? Like, no one ever wants to say when they're doing well. You notice that?
There's one person who always says that he does well, but we're not having a political show. So
sure. Stop bringing it to politics.
All right, I'm sorry.
Let's talk about GDP growth. When we say GDP, we're talking about the gross domestic product, which is the total value, the sum total of all the goods and services that were produced in the United States or in a country for the year. So that's what GDP is. So what's our GDP looking like? Really, really good. The U.S. economy, as everybody knows, or maybe you don't want to admit, we're the biggest economy in the world. And our economy's been very resilient. I mean, we had 11 interest rate hikes in a row from 2022 through 2023. And those interest rate hikes were designed to fight the worst bout of inflation we've ever had, not just in the U.S., but globally. Because, again, Biden didn't cause all the inflation in all the places. Certainly, you could blame him for what happened in the U.S., even though there was a global pandemic that nobody else blames Trump for. But again, this is not about politics today.
Right. But if you're going to blame someone for causing it, are you going to give them credit if it comes down under their leadership too?
Man.
Just saying.
Either count it or don't count it. That's all I'm saying.
Count it or don't count it.
We're going to count it on both sides, or we're not going to count it on both
all
sides.
All or nothing.
Not counting it for one and not counting for the other. But I digress. So our GDP, we are growing. And by the way, like, for a developed economy, a good number for GDP growth is 2%. Like, if you're growing at 2%, that's like the long range average of where you'd expect a large developed economy like the US to be growing. And our economy is growing at 3%. That's our most recent number from April through June, 3%. The quarter before that, it was 1.6%. So we were a little below, we're now above. They also went back and revised a bunch of numbers recently. So there were two negative quarters of GDP growth in the beginning of 2022. They went back and recalculated the numbers as they do from time to time. And they said, you know what? 2022 actually was up. It wasn't down. We were not. I mean, no one ever said we were really in a recession at that time. It wasn't declared. But they went back and said, nah, we were good in that quarter. All that to say, our U.S. economy is very, very strong. GDP growth above average, inflation back down in the twos, despite multiple interest rate hikes. So that's good. That's a good
thing. Sounds good to me.
Now, the GDP is a national number, right? That's how much we're producing and spending money on for services and products throughout the country. If you look at it per capita, that's when you divide it by the number of people, and then look at it per state per capita, very, very different stories being told. Meaning like some states way wealthier than others from a GDP perspective.
Come through, Northeast.
Crazy. The highest GDP per capita state, which really ain't even a state, even though they pay taxes with no representation. It's D.C., $259,000 per capita, followed by New York at 110, Massachusetts at 105. Then you go to the West Coast, state of Washington, 103, California, 99. This doesn't mean that, like, this is how much people make on average in these states.
Right. I think most people will look at that and think that's what it means.
It is kind of viewed as a measure of wealth. Mm-hmm. It is just not directly wealth.
Right. But if you don't got it, you can't spend it.
And where's the lowest GDP per capita? It's in the South, which, again, I can understand why folks might feel like they're not doing as well. They're in poorer places. Like, if you live in Mississippi, GDP per capita is $51,000 compared to $110,000 in New York State.
Yeah, that's literally half. Yeah. I mean, there's a lower cost of living, but there's also a reliance on lower wage industries like farming. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
Yeah. Nobody told you I live in Mississippi? I'm just joking. Yeah, if you're from somewhere,
stop
you're from somewhere.
Messing with my people.
Your people from Mississippi?
Louisiana. Close enough.
Where are your people from? Louisiana or an island? Never mind.
Stevie?
No, man. That's brown skin. You know I love your brown skin.
Okay. Yep. Got it. I just
I need
took
some
a minute.
Every now and then. Consumer confidence. This is another one of these national stats. Mm-hmm. They survey 500 consumers, and they use those 500 people to tell us how all 300 million people in the United States are feeling about economic conditions.
Sample.
It's a sample. Now, this is one measure, and this is really about sentiment, right? Consumer confidence is about sentiment. Sentiment is like, how do I feel?
How do I feel about it?
It's not the numbers.
Right.
It's like my perception of the numbers.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a disconnect between how things are really going and how people feel like.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Now, the numbers are on the upswing. We went from a level of 68.9 to 70.5, which is an uptick.
A little bit.
But I will say, pre-pandemic, consumer sentiment was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's like, what percentage of people feel good about their economic outlook?
But there's some opportunities. That might not be where we're going, but there's some opportunities when consumer sentiment or consumer confidence is low.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's funny is like consumer sentiment from an investment perspective is almost a counter indicator, meaning when people are very pessimistic, it tends to be the best time to invest.
Yeah.
And right now we're below average. Like the average for consumer sentiment index is about 84. So at 70, we're kind of on the lower end. I mean, the low is like 50. Like, that's been the lowest number on record in the last 50-plus years. So we're at 70. We're kind of in the higher end of the middle of the range.
Yeah.
But below average. Typically, when consumer sentiment is really, really strong, it's a horrible time to invest.
Right.
I'm looking
it's
at this chart.
It's the opposite of buying low and selling high.
Yeah.
It's like, confidence is there, and it's like, you about to drop.
Yeah, I'm looking at this chart like
2007,
like we got our butt kicked right after that.
Yep.
2000, you know, these are peaks in consumer sentiment. Like
right.
The market did really poorly after that. Other things at the national scale, productivity is high. Now, this is interesting. So productivity really speaks to how much we're producing as employees. And our productivity rate has grown by 3% in the last year, which means we are making more stuff per hour of work than we were a year ago.
Thank you, robots.
Like, that's good for companies.
Yeah.
it might make somebody feel like they're being overworked. So maybe in that regard, you're worse off. I don't know, but that's good for the economy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, going to labor. So we've got workforce participation is surging. The number of people who are employed or looking for work who are between 25 and 54, we're now at 85%, where before the pandemic, it was 80%.
Yeah.
So there's more people in our workforce today than there were five years ago. Now, look, some of them may be immigrants. Some of them may be loosely documented immigrants. But our workforce is larger today on a percentage basis.
If you own a business, and you do, as long as you have people to fill the role, that's what's most important, right? As a business owner.
Good people, but yeah.
Good people, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not qualified. Just body and seats, but that's a good thing.
Absolutely. We have more people participating in the workforce today, especially in that critical demographic of 25 to 54. Now, one contradictory point about the labor market is that unemployment is a little bit higher than where it was 5 years ago.
But yet, it's still at historic lows.
Correct. So we were at 3.7 in 2019. We're at 4.1 now. Higher, but is it statistically significant?
Right. It's not. But there is a point to be made, and you say it often. If you're the one that wants to be employed and you're not, you don't really care about none of this.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
That's a fact.
I don't think it's statistically significant.
Agreed.
To have unemployment go from 3.7 to 4.1.
Yeah. And it's gone down because it was 4.2 last month. It's 4.1 now. Hourly earnings have gone up by 4% in a world where inflation's growing by 2 and some change. So, folks are doing a little better.
They might
not want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But jokers are doing a little better out here.
And it's what's your definition of better, though?
Yeah.
That's muddied.
Yeah. And then finally, I know I already said finally, but finally, on the national scale, inflation. So the Fed really looks at a measure called the PCE, which is the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index. And that index rose at only 2.5%. Last quarter, down from 3.4%. This is what let the Fed feel comfortable that they could cut interest rates.
Finally.
We got a half a percentage point cut last month. And I'm reading economists saying, man, if the Fed could have seen how good the labor market was, they probably would have cut by only a quarter point.
Yeah.
Because things are going really well. Again, the way the Fed works, if things are bad, then they cut interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
If they're good, then they raise interest rates. And so we know that we're trending more towards a period where we've got to lower interest rates, mainly because they're abnormally high.
Yeah.
Because of the inflation we used to have that we don't have anymore.
Yep.
But at the same time, the economy is doing so strong, it's kind of hard to see the Fed cutting rates by a lot.
It's like, whoa, slow your roll. Just pump the brakes a little bit.
A little bit. So we've broken down the national scale, as a overall country, are our numbers better than they were 5 years ago? On average, I would say yes. But we've got to talk about the individual side. What about for consumers? What about for individuals? Are we better off than we were 5 years ago? Let's keep that conversation going after the break. I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
Yes, let's get into this individual stuff because
our
listeners are like, that's great.
Yeah.
Alan and Andrea are really smart. They're talking about all this economic stuff.
Our listeners in Mississippi can't stand us, by the way. And I love y'all.
Stop it. Why would you say that?
Because we were talking about you can move.
No, you were saying that.
No,
I don't believe I was
together.
Saying that. I cautioned you about talking about my people.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. And I have family in the South.
And then I distanced myself.
Family's from the South, too. My family's from North Carolina, South Carolina. But I'm literally afraid to go to Mississippi. I've never been there.
Yeah, I ain't really trying to hang out.
yeah.
I have experienced some things in my lifetime that it's Looking back now, I'm like, that shouldn't have been happening.
Let me just say like this. They don't advertise Mississippi very well as like a place you'd want to hang out as a black person.
Biloxi.
Yeah, they don't.
Beach and casinos. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, you're right. I've never seen a...
I mean, Mississippi burning. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind for me.
Well...
Like, I ain't trying to go nowhere and burn. Like...
Okay, we gonna leave that alone.
Yeah.
Let's talk about personal economies. How about that?
Let's do it.
All right. So we're gonna shift and talk about some consumer data. So retirement account balances. I'm a nerd when it comes to retirement accounts. I love retirement planning. No one ever says that, but I do. Mm-hmm. And I mean it.
With a straight face.
And with a straight face. With a straight face. The average 401k balance rose to about $127,000 in the second quarter of this year. That's up from $104,000 2 years earlier, according to Fidelity, who has everybody's retirement account.
A lot of people.
401k. Sure.
Okay. So consumers, a little wealthier in terms of their retirement accounts.
Right. I mean, that's really mostly a function of the markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, if you're consistently contributing, you're doing some dollar cost averaging. I'm still getting really technical here, but...
Yeah, you're adding money to it. And
but it's also growing.
The market's going up.
Exactly.
And you have a chance to take money out of the retirement account, but you did not if the average is higher.
Right.
Or you could have taken a loan and that would have brought the average down.
Yep.
So what we're saying is that on average, the consumer is a little wealthier in terms of its retirement account balance.
There you go.
Than 5 years ago.
Now let's talk about balance sheets.
Okay. All right. All right. I like this.
Changes since 2019.
And balance sheet really represents your net worth. When we say balance sheet, we're talking about a financial statement where on the left-hand side, you've got your assets. On the right-hand side, you've got your debts or your liabilities. And the difference is your net worth.
Yep. So said differently, what you own on mm-hmm. the left side,
yep.
what you owe on the right side, the difference is your net worth.
Yep. I like it.
Because we're not really saying assets and liabilities in regular talk. But we have to let you know how smart we are. No, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really looking at what personal balance sheets look like. So since 2019, U.S. consumers had $174 trillion in assets and $20 trillion in liabilities for a net worth of $154 trillion.
And that's adding up every single household.
Every single household.
Like, I know I don't have no trillions.
I'm way
in my account.
Below average.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not an average. That's just the
right.
The
that's
aggregate.
Just the aggregate. You're right. What else? So in 2024, it's a little bit different. $184 trillion in assets, $20.7 trillion in debt. So assets went up.
Mm-hmm.
Debt stayed about the same.
Yeah.
And $163 trillion in net worth. So higher than 4 years prior.
Yeah. And these numbers are adjusted for inflation. Like.
Which was pretty high during this period. But it's come back down, just in case you didn't get that the first time.
So people are wealthier. Our net worth as a country, in terms of the consumers, is up by $10
trillion? Yeah. With a T.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. That's definitely a lot. I mean, U.S. household wealth rebounded strongly in 23, growing 8% and hitting a new all-time high in the last quarter of the year, mostly due on gains in stocks.
Not just gains in stocks, though. Like, we're going to break down all the different contributors, and, like, it's stocks, it's real estate equity.
Yeah.
And for Black people in particular, it's business equity.
Yeah.
Is a big contributor to our growth in net worth. Other stats on the balance sheet of the American consumer. You know whose wealth is growing the fastest in America? And this is going to be controversial, and I might get slapped across the table for saying this.
I do, actually, but you go ahead and say it.
It's the lower wealth families.
Mm-hmm.
Not low income.
Right.
I'm saying the folks who are in the bottom 50% of wealth distribution.
Yeah.
Their net worth is growing at a faster percentage
mm-hmm.
than the folks who are above. Now, look, I'm not saying that they're killing the game.
That's why folks is mad.
I'm saying they may be starting from a low base and getting to a more moderate base.
Yeah.
But the wealth growth is happening more in folks who are in the bottom half of the economic spectrum.
I wonder what the correlation is between that and sentiment, right? Yeah. Is it that population that has the highest rate of growth that is the least optimistic or the most pessimistic? I don't know.
You know what's funny? You know what really stratifies? Big word for you.
That's your big word for the day? I haven't been pointing them out lately, but...
I know, but I've been dropping them.
You've been dropping them.
You know what really stratifies or divides the consumer sentiment number the most?
No.
Political affiliation.
Ah.
If you're a Republican...
Yes, yes, yes.
Your economic view is very, very negative.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Democrat, it's generally pretty positive.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Bias.
You've got one candidate who's not in office right now saying that the other guy sucks or the other gal sucks,
mm-hmm.
and you believe it.
Mm-hmm. Just because they said it.
I digress.
Mm. But we're not having a political conversation today.
So the top 0.1% has also grown their wealth, but just not as much as the bottom 50%. Like, we always hear about, like, wealth disparity and all that. And wealth disparity exists, don't get me wrong. But, like, folks are coming up. So the things that are contributing the most, I mean, Andrea hit on it, it is retirement savings, it's investments, it's equities, it's stocks, it's mutual funds. But real estate's a big one. And then our ability to save money, our savings, our money that's in the bank is increasing. Like, that's been a big contributor to the growth in wealth over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I just wonder if it felt good to have extra cash during the pandemic, because we were all looking for a bright spot somewhere.
Yeah.
So for people who were able to pay down debt or save or just save on their expenses because nobody was going anywhere, that felt good. And I think some people were committed to keeping some of that feeling, even if it didn't go back to where it was at the time.
Yeah, no, it did feel good. It did. And that money's gone, by the way. Like, we've spent that stimulus, that pandemic savings, like, that money is out of here.
Well, once we came out of that, right, that's when inflation started increasing. So some of the same things we were doing just cost more. I mean, we were all eating at home for a while there, but even food at home costs more now than it did then.
But if you were a homeowner,
oh, yeah.
Like, you came up.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest... Like, the biggest gain since 2019, again, the savings is a small percentage.
Yeah.
The big ones are real estate and the stock and bond market. Like, it's investments
and
real estate. Like, those are the big, big ones. So let's get into paychecks.
Americans make more money than they did at the end of 2019, even after adjusting for unusually high inflation.
Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to talk about that.
Everybody's getting paid more. I think I got a raise, though.
Since 2019?
Mm-hmm. Well, you weren't I got a raise because I wasn't, because I changed firms, but.
Yeah.
Did I?
I don't know. I don't know how much you made. I think you're probably doing pretty good.
I'm responsible for my own raises.
I think you're managing doing pretty more well, assets. My friend.
My clients do better. I'm doing better.
There you go.
Anyway.
But yeah, the numbers show that on average, we're about 4% higher than where we were in 2019,
mm-hmm.
net of inflation. Not 4% higher in aggregate, but net of inflation, meaning you add in all the inflation and then you say, did I beat it or not? And if so, did I beat it by what percent? We're saying we're better than we were in 2019 by about 4%. Now look, there's some people that did way better than they were in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to like close your eyes for a minute, listener. Just ask yourself. Am I making more money today than I was 5 years ago? And if so, like, how much more? And people may not want to admit it, but, like, I know it's hard to visualize inflation.
Yeah.
But, like, I know we've been complaining about our increases in grocery bills and things like that. But I bet you you're bringing in more money net of inflation than where you were 5 years ago.
More than likely. What's interesting is you see similar trends in income and wages as we saw with assets. So from 2020 to 2022, year-over-year pay growth was highest for the bottom 25% of earners.
Interesting. The income disparity closing a little bit, not enough.
Yep.
But like a lot of states have raised their minimum wages. Some in excess, I think. Like, I'm not trying to be cool or anything, like, but like in some states,
$30 an hour,
it's hard for businesses to do well in some of those states. But the average weekly pay in America, $1,151 a week. If you make more than $1,151 per week, you're better than average, FYI.
Yeah. And in some places, that will get you far.
And just in nominal terms, that number is 23% higher than it was in 2019.
Okay. That's fair.
And then you add in all the inflation, and it's 4% higher, net of inflation.
Yep.
So here's one stat that I thought was really interesting. Cash in wallets. So on average, Americans carry today $74 of cash in their wallets. And in 2019, they carried only $60. That's kind of like counter of what I would expect. And this has nothing to do with how well you're doing.
Yeah, it's
this
just
is like
cash.
A lifestyle decision.
Yeah. All the money that moves in payment apps and people are walking around with more cash.
More cash with an extra $14. What y'all doing with that extra $14, by the way? Because I'm old school. I always have cash, by the way.
Yeah,
don't rob me, listener. Don't rob me.
Yeah, I put it in different places. Like, you'd have to really think. But I wonder if it's the small business that's passing on banking costs to their customers by saying, oh, it's a 3% discount if you pay cash.
Could be.
I don't know.
Hey,
when I have the most cash around me, it's because I'm going to pay for a service that is...
Strip club.
Not at all.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm not going to give away my nail salon, hair salon...
I got you.
...situations, but it's like, you know, and gas. I hate to get gas on a credit card.
You know what's funny? I hate paying cash for gas. It just feels like it's taking too much of my cash. Like, I usually have, like, about $200 on me.
Yeah.
And if it's, like, $80 or $90... And it's something like gas. I'm like, I ain't trying to give up my cash. Like, I place a premium on the cash I spend.
Right.
So I'm more likely to, I'm opposite of you, even though I know I could save money.
What you're really saying is your luxury vehicle requires premium gas, and you don't want to pay for it. But no, there are a lot of gas stations, not all, that charge more if you pay by credit card.
Yeah, for sure.
And that just feels like throwing money away to me. So I keep... cash. I try to pay for gas with cash.
You're very good. It's a good financial person.
But I also know I'm just going to get a certain amount of gas.
So let me ask you a question. Growing up, was your dad real big on y'all carrying cash, his daughters, making sure y'all had cash?
Because
I feel like this is an old school dad thing. Like, for me, my dad always made sure that I had a little cash on me.
I wouldn't say that.
He didn't give me the cash. He encouraged me to always make sure I had cash on me.
I don't remember that being a thing. I remember life skills.
Okay.
Know how to change a tire. Know how to check the oil.
Yeah.
It was more that kind of stuff. I don't remember that.
Got it.
I have to ask my sister, though.
Okay. All right. So speaking of cash, we talked about cash in actual wallets, which is higher by $14. Very interesting. I think we need to investigate that as well.
Yeah, I'm going to know who they polled. Yeah.
But also, folks have more money in the bank. So the median balance in checking and savings accounts, $3,091. And that's 14% higher than it was in 2019.
Okay. But we also have the fact that account balances fell from pandemic highs faster for lower earners. So here is bucking the trend that we saw with assets and wages.
Yeah. If you are a lower income person, like, I want to make no mistake about this. Like, you are getting crushed.
Yeah.
Like, the inflation's hurting you more. Not owning real estate is hurting you more. If you're not an investor, if you're not in a 401k program, if you don't have a brokerage account, like, these things are hurting you because everyone else is getting a lift from all these things.
Yep. And you don't get to experience or participate in it.
We did a show a long time ago, and it was called Capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Either take a seat at the table or be on the menu.
Mm.
And to be frank, a lot of our low-income earners in this country are on the menu.
Yeah.
Like, the real estate owner who owns the apartment building is building wealth on their back.
Mm-hmm.
The person who owns the check cashing company.
Yeah.
Building wealth off their back. The inflation has hurt the low-income person the most, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And again, thinking about where it is in the country, lower incomes are in the South. Folks are getting killed out there. No surprise that they're looking for a big change.
Yeah. I mean, on the positive side, though, savings rates are higher, and a lot of families still have plenty of savings to draw on.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
It's not that we don't disregard the lower income families or the families who don't, but this is what the data is telling us.
Yeah. Here goes a counterpoint. I know we've been giving you all the roses, but we give you everything. We're not ever going to give you, hide any data from you. So credit cards. Credit card debt is higher than where it was 5 years ago.
So we're holding on to our cash, but we're charging things?
That's what it looks like. Make it make sense. So in 2019, the average credit card balance was $5,800. Today it's $6,200.
It's not that much higher.
And interest rates are higher. So back then, the average credit card rate was 17 and now it's 23.
Now that's enough right there.
Both are egregious and ridiculous and punitive. I'm not a big fan of credit cards. So, like, I hate that the balances are higher.
Yeah.
But I also hope that folks can get rid of them and stop using them.
Yeah.
I meet so many young folks who are like, I got to use the credit card. I need my points. I'm like, yo, that's a trick.
Right.
It is a trick. It's like, you remember watching, what was it, like Tom and Jerry or the Roadrunner back in the day? The Roadrunner, remember they'd have like a little trap, like a carrot with the box with the stick, and you
literally
go grab
the
carrot,
dangling
and
carrot.
That box just falls on you.
Yep.
It's waiting. It's an anvil.
Or explodes or falls down a cliff and
Word.
All the things.
There is an anvil waiting for you. You can go try to play with those points all you want.
Yep.
It's coming.
My mom calls it the trick of the enemy. Applies in so many different situations.
Car costs. That's one area we're talking about some of the negatives.
Tell me about it.
Car costs have gone up significantly.
Don't I know it.
The average car payment in America, $737 today.
Bananas.
That is 28% higher than it was in 2019.
Your first car. Did you buy with cash or did you have a car payment?
Well, which first car? The one that my dad bought me for $400?
Well, that answers that question.
That car? The 1982 Cutlass? With the roof hanging down on my head?
Oh, wow.
And the hubcaps that will fall off at inopportune times? You talking about that car?
Well, he bought it.
With the bad paint
job? And he paid cash for it, so there was no...
Well, you talking about the car where the back windows didn't go down? But the very, very back little side windows flared out?
Like, I'm sorry.
Talking about that car?
I'm sorry that I've triggered you.
No, I just want to know which car you're talking about.
You sound angry.
Yeah. The Broham? That's what I had. You remember the Cutlass Supreme Broham model? You talking about that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We paid cash for that car.
Okay. All right. So let me
pivot. Or are you talking about my next car, which was a Ford Escort?
Like that one.
With the crank windows.
Did you or did you not have a car payment?
No, I did not. There should not be a car payment for a 20-year-old Ford Escort.
Okay,
so,
we didn't say when you got it or what year or model it was,
I got my first car payment when I graduated college. So I was a senior. My car died my senior year, and Pops helped me out with a down payment.
Okay.
He covered my payment for like the first 3 months.
Okay.
And then I started working, and then I covered the payments after that.
Do you remember how much your car payment was?
$300.
Do you remember the interest rate on your car payment?
6%.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
My first car payment, I was a junior in college. It was a used car.
Okay.
My car payment was $220 a month.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I know it was killing you at the time.
My mom didn't finance it, though. I had to give her a whole academic year's worth of, I'm sorry, it was right before my senior year. I had to give her a whole academic year worth of payments. From my summer job. So I basically spent no money.
Yeah.
I changed my withholdings to zero. Like, don't take any taxes out.
Yeah.
Because she was like, you got to give me 10 months worth of car. I'll make your car payments, but you got to give me the money. Crazy, right?
That's a good mom.
Yeah.
And you took care of it.
I took care of it.
It created some fiscal responsibility.
It absolutely did.
And you highlight another good point.
I mean, she had to co-sign for it. So she's like, you're not about to catch me out there.
You're about to mess me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. But I think, again, you're highlighting the story of economic evolution.
Yeah.
Which should be happening in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You should be bettering yourself in either college or a trade school or some sort of apprenticeship program, which should be setting you up for making more money.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, you should be making better financial decisions.
Yeah.
Which should lead you to be better off in the future.
Should.
Newsflash. Like, Joe Biden ain't out here giving out jobs. Joe Biden ain't out here.
Joe Biden kind of lost his job.
He kind of did.
He lost the ability to apply for the job again.
Facts.
Yeah.
Also, like, what's funny, a friend of mine was like, well, I liked my taxes 5 years ago. I was like, wait, I don't know if you realize this. The taxes haven't changed.
Yeah.
They've literally not changed at all. So the 2017 tax cuts are still in effect today.
Congratulations, so you're making more money. So that means you're paying making more money. In taxes. Yes.
Oh, so you are better off because you make more money.
Right.
No.
Never going to look at it like that.
Nobody wants to admit that.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, am I better off today than I was 5 years ago? We're really breaking down your personal balance sheet, your personal financial situation. We're going to keep talking about this topic, but by the end, we'll give you some more ideas on how you might make your situation a little bit better if it's not where you want it to be right now. I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Momentum.
Advisor Show.
Advisor Show.
Mm-hmm.
Are you better than where you were 5 minutes ago? I say yes.
That headache is gone.
Well, I was saying that people have been listening to us and
oh.
getting educated. And
sorry, I thought you were
asking
me.
That makes them better, but fine.
Self-centered me.
Thinking about your own headache. We don't care about your headache, woman. No, I'm just joking. We do care. I'm glad you're feeling better.
So let's talk about housing.
Yeah. Housing for most people is their biggest expense. And if you happen to be a homeowner in these last 5 years, you got a lot richer. However, as I mentioned earlier, if you were a renter, the mm-hmm. rent has gone up and the rent is too DAMN high.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the reasons why your budget is being strained right now.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about the average mortgage payment.
Okay.
It's actually lower today than it was 4 years ago.
Interesting. Wait
Interesting.
A minute. While the rent has risen, mortgage payments have gotten cheaper? Make that make sense. Why is that? How is it possible that mortgage payments are lower than where they were 5 years ago?
So depending on when the home was purchased mm-hmm. and what rate the purchaser got when they first started financing the home, if rates are lower, maybe they refinance and maybe their monthly payment is lower.
That's it. A lot of people refinanced in that period of 2019, 2020, 2021. Mm-hmm. Not me, sadly. I regret it. It's one of my biggest regrets in life. I didn't talk about that on the regret show. But man, I wish I had refinanced my mortgage to one of these 3% mortgages.
Listen, I had a second mortgage at one time
mm-hmm.
where the rate was significantly higher than the first one. So we refinanced both loans together for a lower monthly payment. We're paying it off faster.
All right. Go ahead and rub it in. What's your interest rate on your mortgage?
I think we locked in at 3.85.
I'm about to flip this whole table over. So mad. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. But for a lot of people, they were smart. They listened to us. We were given the advice on this podcast of like, yo, you need to go out and refinance your mortgage. A lot of people did it.
So you didn't listen to your own advice?
For complicated technical reasons,
I did not. You might have some other complications going on. Not in a negative way, but just...
It was my own, like, I won't say laziness, but like I was focusing on a bunch of other things. Making sure things happen for clients and everything else, and I ain't get around to it.
We are the worst at, it's like other professions, right? Where, have you heard the expression? This is some old school stuff.
Here it goes.
The baker's children have no bread.
Sure, fine.
The cobbler's children have no shoes.
Sure.
Like, for as wonderful as I think we are as financial advisors and planners, we get around to taking our own advice less.
Yeah, we neglect ourselves. You made a good point about mortgage payments being lower for folks that already own homes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I always contrast that with the renter whose payment's going up every year.
Yeah.
So if you have a home, your payment might actually be lower than where it was 5 years ago. Your rent is certainly higher.
Yeah.
But we've got to bring in the counterpoint. If I'm a new buyer,
yeah,
my payment today is going to be significantly higher because rates are higher, because prices are elevated, where the median mortgage might be $1,500 and some change. A new buyer is going to have a mortgage of at least $3,000. It's kind of the average number.
That's literally double what a lot of people are paying.
Yeah. Which, again, is why we told y'all to buy a house years ago.
But also why you can't focus on trying to keep up with the Joneses. Because you don't know what your neighbor came in at. Well, these days you probably can find out.
But you don't know his mortgage information. You don't know how much he put down.
You don't know how much they put down. You don't know what interest rate they're paying. You might know the purchase price.
That's it.
But even if you and your neighbor presumably have the same amount of income, you don't know what their expenses and other obligations are. So,
yeah. Now, look, homeownership does have some other inflation that's built in that we don't talk about a ton, but like inflation on your insurance payment.
Yeah.
Like that's gone up.
Mm-hmm.
So, home insurance premiums on average are $1,765 right now.
Yeah. Repairs, construction. If you need to get work done, not just to be fancy or upgrade because you want to, you're going to pay more for the cost of goods and services to get that done.
Yeah. So insurance today, $1,765. 5 years ago, it was $1,164. Yeah. So it's also because of, what was that show we did? Climate Change in Your Pocketbook. We talked about the fact that the world is getting more volatile in terms of storms, in terms of earthquakes and
global warming
and everything else. So that's caused your insurance to go up. But housing, again, is added to people's wealth. And also it's protected people from inflation, for real, if you owned a home.
Yep.
And the average rent, by the way, we talked about rent going up. The average rent is 30% higher than where it was 5 years ago. We've got mortgages that have gone down.
Mm-hmm.
We've got rents that have gone up by 30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's no fun. So let's move to the other side of the balance sheet. We talked about assets. Let's talk about debt service.
Okay.
Or I guess really we're talking about paying our debt.
Yeah, debt service really speaks to the percentage of my income that goes towards paying debt.
Yep.
I'm going to give you this stat. Sorry, I got to go backwards because I didn't put the picture here. So in 2019, the average household debt ratio was about 10%, and today it's about 10% also, about the same. Meaning the percentage of people's disposable income that's going towards paying debt, about the same. And even though we're in more debt, if we talk about credit cards, for example, we refinanced our big debt already at lower rates. And so even though rates are high, my debt service is about the same as a percentage of my income as it was years ago.
Yeah, and we look at that more as an indicator. I think when we look at debt service ratios, we like to see folks be under 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is suggesting that most people are well under that.
Yeah.
Which is good. You don't want to be, if we're talking about housing still, you know, you don't want to be house poor. Right. Yeah, I'm paying my mortgage on time. I'm good. But you can't do nothing else.
Yeah.
That's no fun.
And then finally, on home ownership as a source of wealth, the average home equity in 2019 was just over $170,000. Today, it's over $320,000. So, like, folks, home equity has almost doubled in the last 5 years. Like, that is very, very material.
It is material, especially if you are fortunate enough to be working with a planner or just forward thinking enough to think about how you're positioned, you can cover some of your expenses through equity. Not a recommendation, but it's something you have it. You can tap that asset for, yeah, I can't say that. I can't even say that with a straight face.
You can tap that asset. Yeah, you can tap that asset. No, but home equity.
That's a show.
Sure. You're going to be laughing the whole time if we did that show.
I'm saying it on record. We should do a show.
Sure. Tap that asset. But home equity is real equity. It's real net worth. It's real cash. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could sell your house or you could take a loan against it, but it's real money that'll spend.
Absolutely.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. So we've talked a lot about the overall economy. We've talked about the average American consumer. But you're going to have a friend who says, all right, look, fine. I give you the point that the overall economy is better. I'll even give you the point that the American consumer is better. But what about Black people? Mm. So we've got some stats.
Now, look,
some of our stats are a little dated because the numbers that the government puts out, the last time they did the report was 2022. So now we're going to compare 2022 to 2013. So really you're talking about the last 10 years.
Okay.
So in 2013, the Black wealth gap was $9 for every $100 that a white family had in wealth. Mm. Meaning if they have 100, we've got 9. In 2022, it's $16. Now look, that's a big gap. Like that's an $84 gap. Like I want my gap closed.
Facts.
But the gap is getting smaller in the last 10 years.
Okay.
For Latin families, it was $10 for every $100 that white folks had in wealth. Now it's $22. So their gap getting smaller.
Still wide.
Still too wide.
Yep.
Now, what are the big contributors to this closing of the wealth gap? And I say closing is a strong word. Narrowing. Don't say narrowing of the wealth gap because it ain't closed.
Right.
You could drive a truck through that wealth gap.
Yeah. But still.
For Black folks, really, it's number one is housing. Mm-hmm. That's the majority of the closing of that wealth gap or the narrowing. But number two, it's businesses.
Yeah.
That's really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. We are owning some stuff. Like, that's a headline you don't get to see a whole lot.
Right.
And the value of those assets, the value of those businesses, is contributing to the narrowing of the wealth gap. Maybe you don't own a business, but think of your homeboy or your homegirl that has a business that maybe didn't have one 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Interestingly enough, for white folks, their number one contributor to the growth of their wealth is the stock market. Hmm. For Black folks, it's our homes. Hmm. For white folks, their number two is housing. Mm-hmm. For Black folks, it's businesses. So the way that we're growing our wealth is just a little different.
It's different.
Man, I'm tired of looking at numbers.
Yeah, this is pretty technical.
It was, but good. And I think that the message we're trying to convey is that, look, folks are doing better. They've got more money in the bank. They're worth more. Even after you adjust for inflation, it's just that people may not feel any better. Mm-hmm. So what are some things that you should be doing if you want to feel better? We could do a whole show on this topic alone.
Yeah.
And we kind of do talk about this all the time.
We do.
Like, it's basic blocking and tackling of financial literacy and manage your own money well.
In other words, don't underestimate the power of the fundamentals.
Word. Save, invest, pay off debt, buy a house, invest in real estate, minimize taxes, make more money, get a better job, ask for a raise, keep listening to the Momentum Advisors podcast.
Well, that's it right there. What else is there?
That's it. So we've broken it all down today. I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
See you next week.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, PayLater, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.